Fairy tales have a moral. Urban legends a warning. And crime has a cause and effect. Join us as we explore the origins obscura of Boy Scout Lane.
Hey, honey, tell me a story.
Okay, today I'm going to tell you the tale of Boy Scout Lane.
I have some wise-ass comment to insert in here, I'm sure.
But one's not coming to you at the moment?
No, one's not coming to me at the moment.
So then you don't actually have a wise-ass comment. You just want to have a wise-ass comment.
I do. I really do, because it involves Boy Scouts, and I was a Boy Scout for all of...
2 hours?
Yeah, something like that. And yes, alcohol was involved.
In Linwood, Wisconsin, located southwest of Stevens Point and northwest of Plover, there's a dirt road that's about a half a mile long with no outlet at the end. It's less than a tenth of a mile from the Wisconsin River, so the air is frequently filled with mist and fog. The surrounding land is mostly wooded, and the trees hang over the road, giving it an eerie feel, especially in the evening when the shadows of the branches seem to reach out for you as you pass beneath them. Sometime in the early 1950s, the Boy Scouts of America purchased the land surrounding this lonely dirt road with plans to turn it into a Boy Scout camp, and they named the little road going into the property Boy Scout Lane.
Because why not?
Of course. What else are you going to name it? Camp Kichigumi Wawa Lane?
Yes.
In the early summer the following year, a nearby troop of Boy Scouts made plans to use the land for their annual camping trip. The land hadn't been developed yet, the organization hadn't even put in bathroom facilities, but the troop leader thought it would be a great opportunity to teach the boys some of the primitive camping skills that were necessary for them to graduate to Eagle Scouts. The scouts met up in the parking lot of the local elementary school on a Friday night to start their journey. The scene as the boys boarded the bus was a festive and happy one. The kids stowed their billets on the bus and gave their parents distracted goodbyes as they eyed the crowd for their friends. Some moms were a little teary-eyed as they sent their baby boys off for the first time, while others were obviously looking forward to a weekend without their kids.
I would be in the latter group.
Finally, the scoutmaster checked the last name off of his clipboard, and the bus driver closed the doors. As the bus rolled out of the parking lot, you could hear the excited chatter of the boys on the bus, many of whom had never spent a weekend outside of their parents' company. The parents all smiled and made their way back to their cars, chatting with one another as they discussed their weekend plans. None of them knew that they had just said their final goodbyes. The first anyone knew that something had gone terribly wrong on the trip was when the bus didn't arrive at the scheduled time on Sunday afternoon to drop the scouts off. An hour passed, and then another. The parents were concerned and debated when and who they should call. Would the Boy Scouts know why their kids were late coming home? Was the home office even open on a Sunday? Finally, tired of the discussion and just wanting to do something, the father of one of the boys disengaged from the group and walked to a nearby house. He explained the situation to the woman who answered the door and asked if he could please use her phone to call the police. There had been no reports of a bus accident to the police, so search parties were immediately sent out to find the group of scouts. They traveled all the possible routes to the Boy Scout camp, but the bus was nowhere to be found. When searchers arrived at the site where the boys should have been camping, they found little evidence that the scouts had been there at all. A spot where a campfire may have been built, and a few scraps of detritus and trash that may have been left behind, but no tents were there, no billets, no clothing or food, and most importantly, no Boy Scouts.
This sounds like the opening sequence to several horror movies I've seen throughout my life.
Pretty much, yeah. The search carried on for days, with volunteers walking the Boy Scout land and nearby properties. They turned over every log in the woods and walked the furrows of every nearby field, desperately searching for any evidence the missing boys may have been through there. As hopes began to fade, the worst fears were confirmed when the bodies of two of the young scouts were found huddled together on a far corner of the Boy Scout property. The boys had died from exposure and dehydration. Who knows how long they had wandered alone, scared, in the woods. The strangest thing, about them, though, was that their clothing was charred and each boy had sustained several first and second degree burns on their bodies before their deaths. Yet no evidence turned up during the searches of a significant fire occurring in the area. The rest of the boys were never found, dead or alive. Nor was the scout leader or the bus driver. They just simply vanished from the earth without a trace.
What about the bus itself?
Never found. In the months and years that followed, a lot of speculation of what could have happened to the Boy Scout troop was bandied about town, though never in the presence of their deeply grieving parents. Was there a bus crash and the bus is still out there, hidden in the deep woods somewhere? Perhaps there was a fatal fire from one of the Coleman lanterns that the troop used while they were camping. Maybe they got lost on a hike. Maybe they were murdered. Perhaps there was a serial killer in the area. Or maybe the troop leader or the bus driver went mad. None of the conjecture explained how so many people could have disappeared without leaving some evidence of their existence behind, though.
It was UFOs.
That's probably the most likely. Boy Scout Lane, while it had always been a little creepy with the persistent mist and fog from the Wisconsin River, now felt downright ominous when people visited. Many of the residents said they didn't like going down there, not even during the day, because it felt like 1,000 eyes were watching your every step. The Boy Scouts, for their part, were deeply saddened by the great loss to their community, but decided after some time that they would still go ahead with building the planned camp, with the addition of a memorial dedicated to the missing troop.
Yes, because a memorial is going to make it all better.
It makes it all go away.
But, you know, the Boy Scouts spent that, you know, good Boy Scout money to buy this piece of land.
Mm-hmm. Have to do something with it. Can't just sit there.
Oh, of course not.
Unfortunately, they were unable to keep contractors on the job to complete the project. Many work crews walked off after reports of seeing lanterns bobbing off in the distance after sunset and hearing footsteps walking in the brush around the areas they were working. No sources for the noises were ever found. When the local chapter leader visited the site himself, he left quickly and appeared shaken to those who saw him afterwards. While he never went on record about his experience on Boy Scout Lane, people close to him say he heard what he thought was the screech of bus brakes, but that sound morphed into the undeniable screams of children in agony. The camp project was scrapped shortly after that. On July in 2005, a group of three Boy Scout camp counselors heard the legend of Boy Scout Lane. So this is 20 years later. They decided to drive there and see what it was all about. They armed themselves with a VHS video recorder, and while they felt uneasy as soon as...
Yeah, that's arming yourself. How about a crucifix and some holy water? Sorry.
While they felt uneasy as soon as they turned down the road, they felt their experience was pretty uneventful. That is, until they viewed the footage they recorded. On the video, they heard whispered breaths that weren't theirs. They saw balls of light flashing by the screen and bouncing in the rearview mirror of the car. And at the end of the footage, as they were about to turn back onto the main road, the video recorded a face pressed up against the passenger window of the car. Not a reflection, but a figure on the other side of the glass. Perhaps the scariest evidence wasn't found until the next morning, when the driver went to get into her car and found small handprints on the glass of the window in the video, ones that could not have been there the day before.
Freaky.
Mm. In 1979, the Boy Scouts of America decided to sell the land, which had sat unused for over two decades at that point. It took several years to find a buyer willing to overlook the reputation of the area, but eventually one was found in the 80s, and now the land surrounding the road is private property. However, you can still walk or drive down Boy Scout Lane and see the legend for yourself, if you dare.
Okay, now I really thought you were going to tell me that the person who bought it was a land developer and they built a neighborhood in there just like in Poltergeist.
You didn't move the bodies. Actually, in my research, it appeared that most of the land was bought by a single family and divided between different members of the family. So at least at the time, I don't know if that's who's still living there, but in the like birth and death notices that I came across mentioning this road, it was all the same family, but different branches of it. So like two brothers owned parts of the property. And I think parents owned a part of the property. Yeah. So not a land developer, but just a handful of families live on what was the Boy Scout property.
Okay. And they let you walk around. No, they don't chase you off the property, at least.
Well, the road itself is public property.
Okay.
So you can walk or drive down the road. I actually have this lower in my notes. Okay, so in researching this legend, I watched several videos of like paranormal investigators going to investigate Boy Scout Lane. I read some blog accounts of like the one I included is probably the main one that you hear when people talk about this legend, the one that happened in 2005. I did add some other people's experience into that one, just kind of to mesh it all together. There was a common theme, you know, in comments of posts and the discussion about this legend that I came across, and that is, if you go there, you will be followed. Like, that is not part of the legend. It's really something that everybody who has decided to go check this out for themselves, they were followed. It's not paranormal. It is one of the landowners making sure you're not screwing around. You're not doing something. And and as we talk about the problems with this legend, that will become more apparent why that is. Okay. So
that might be a good point to stick in for those of you who don't know or may not have picked it up. I actually have no idea what's going on. No.
John asked me to tell him a story, and I do not tell him. I might tell him the title of what we're discussing, but I don't give him the meat of the story until we discuss the problems and the whys.
Yes. So Anne's actually telling me these things for the first time. And you're part of the conversation.
So, right out of the gate, I am going to tell you that once again, I fleshed out this story.
You know,
I had to, because it was literally every account other than the people who like went to check it out and talked about their paranormal experiences. The legend itself was like two sentences. It was a troop of Boy Scouts may have disappeared, but even worse, there were, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different variations of what might or might not have happened to these kids on this road. I actually, in my story, to actually make it a story that I could tell you, tried to incorporate all of them just into the same legend. But I couldn't actually, again, find a recounting of what the actual tale was, just that there is a legend about a troop of Boy Scouts that met their fatal end on Boy Scout Lane and now, I guess, haunt it. But no details, but several different possible variations of the tale. And one was a bus crash. One was that the bus driver was a murderer. One was that the scout leader was a murderer and later hung himself, maybe or maybe not. One was that the troop wandered off like on a hike or something and disappeared. Another one was that there was a forest fire from a dropped lantern. Another one was that two survivors got out of whatever happened and their bodies were found, but they were the only ones ever found. And another variation was that everybody, all of them, went missing for no apparent reason and were never heard from again.
So this is one of those, you have a beginning of the story. Mm-hmm. A bunch of kids went camping. And then you have the end of the story where they never came back. And a bunch of different people filled in the middle with whatever their addled brains could come up with.
Right.
Okay.
The thing about it is, though, if a actual group of Boy Scouts and one or two adult handlers go missing, there's going to be a record of it, right?
I would figure even in the 50s, that may have made national.
Yes. There's no record of it. Not from any of the papers in the surrounding areas. There was no Boy Scout troop that went missing. No crime reports, no news stories, nothing. There was no forest fire. So, and that's why I did try and include that element of it in my recounting that, you know, there may have been a fire because there was conjecture that, you know, at that time they were using the lighted lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
So I added that conjecture into my recounting of the tale. I tried to take everything and just kind of pull it in to my into my storytelling to make the legend into something narratable. Right. Other than it, these things might have happened. We don't know.
But I would like to point out that not one of those stories involved Bigfoot.
No, Bigfoot was framed. Honestly, though, for like my tale, I was thinking UFOs. Like that's where I would go to if that's how it had actually happened. So when you said they were abducted by UFOs, it was like, yeah, that's probably the most likely thing. But then, you know, you add in the kids with the charred clothing, which that wasn't part. I was just trying to add the fire portion into it. And Wisconsin gets a lot of forest fires. Well, not so much anymore, but back in the day they did. Like, I know my parents talked about some major ones that happened when they were younger growing up. So it's not like unusual that there would be a forest fire in, you know, the northern parts of Wisconsin, but it would be unusual that that didn't show up in any papers anywhere, especially in relation to missing children. There's no evidence that any of this happened other than just hearsay.
Now, because you told me, I did know in advance the area this was in, and I recognize the name of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in the water?
Yeah, so, and I, you heard me, I occasionally will discuss these episodes with a couple of my friends as I'm trying to like suss things out, and you heard me telling somebody that the area is rife with urban legends, and it is, and that's actually a step down in my notes. This road, Boy Scout Lane, is a quarter of a mile from a place called Woodville Cemetery, which is the burial place of Calvin Blood. There is a legend that surrounds Calvin Blood and that cemetery as well. In one of the videos I watched, they were actually investigating both sites. It co-opts, I talked about how, you know, in one of the possible versions, the troop leader hung himself. That actually co-opts the Calvin Blood legend. So those two are kind of merging together.
What did Calvin Blood do?
I don't know. I tried not to actually research it that much, but okay. I didn't want to co-opt the two, and we might cover that later because, you know, it being somewhat local to us, not local, but. And then there's a witch in the area. It's not too far from a couple of other somewhat notorious Wisconsin hauntings, all of which I don't want to get into too much because they might, again, be used for later episodes. But the thing that stuck out to me is that Ed Gein, where he lived and dug up graves and murdered women and was buried, is about 20 miles away from here. It's less than, actually, 20 miles away.
And if you're listening to this and you don't know who Ed Gein is, you are listening to the wrong show.
I can recommend several really good podcasts. But yeah, so I think because one of the things was a serial killer, like maybe there's a serial killer in the area. So I think that being in such close proximity to where Ed Gein's stomping ground was, and even though it's a completely different MO from what he used, but they also placed this as originating in the 50s, which is when he would have also been doing his thing. His gross, nasty Ed Gein things. So I think being in that close proximity to something as scary and icky as that, makes it an area that's kind of prevalent to urban legends and hauntings. Like it's in part of the culture, this like weirdness. But the other thing that I'd like to point out is I talked about the recounting of the group of camp counselors who went down there and supposedly recorded video evidence of what happened. And one of these people, I think she was a girl. I'm not positive. So if I'm misgendering, I'm sorry. Is her actual personal account that she had posted on a Ghost Stories forum. And she says that she has this video evidence and people were like, post it, you know, Pixar, it didn't happen. We want to see, right?
Yeah.
And her response was, I can't, it's on VHS.
I can convert VHS.
Right, yeah. So she never produced evidence of this actually happening, even though like people were asking her to, and she was saying she would see if she could, if it was possible, but it never materialized with the only like, well, it's on VHS, so I just don't know if I can do that. Well, if you actually had this evidence, wouldn't it kind of be a priority to do that, to put it out there for people to see?
I tell you, for the past, 30 years, there has been the technology to digitize VHS. There used to be mail-in services where you could just mail your tape in. And right. I would think that if I had something freaky on videotape, I would absolutely convert it, post it, send it to Grant and Jason.
Okay.
Hell, I might even send it to that Zach guy.
I don't even know his last name. I never watched that show.
Me either. I've just seen clips.
Baggins or something, maybe. I don't know.
Isn't that Hobbit? Oh, no, it's Bilbo. Sorry.
There's no recorded proof of anything that backs up this legend. Not actually even the land ownership. So as I was researching this, everybody would say, well, in actuality, it wasn't Boy Scouts Lane because all these kids were murdered there, which is what, you know, the original legend is. Well, it's named Boy Scout Lane because all these kids died there. And everybody would say, that's not actually true. It was named Boy Scout Lane because the Boy Scouts of America owned it and were going to build a camp there. I could not find any proof of that. I'm not sure that the Boy Scouts actually ever owned this land. They did own land on the other side of town. It was the northeastern side of Stevens Point. They owned a chunk of land that they sold off in 79.
Okay.
But I could not find anything saying that that land was actually theirs. And now the first actual record I could find of the street name was in 1986. So I'm not sure that in the 50s that it was a recorded street.
Or in the 70s when the lady took the video.
No, she took the video in 2005.
Oh, okay.
In the 70s was when they sold it.
Okay. Sorry, I had my dates mixed up.
Yeah. So I'm not even sure that the Boy Scouts own that land. And it could just be that it was named Boy Scout Lane because somebody who bought it and actually dug that road, you know, had a son who was an Eagle Scout or, you know.
Or, you know, it could have been, depending on the year, they adopt a highway thing where, you know, yeah. This is patrolled by the Boy Scouts.
It's a dirt road, so I doubt it was like being cared for by, or I don't know, maybe. So Eagle Scouts do big like community projects.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe something like that.
Possibly, if it was.
I did see a lot of reports in the papers of like Boy Scouts doing Eagle Scout projects and being, you know, being promoted that, hey, this Boy Scout is working on their Eagle Scout promotion and, you know, they want to do this if there is anybody, out, you know, residents who need that or want to help them with that. So
yeah, maybe somebody lived at the end of the lane there and did not actually have a dirt road. So the Boy Scouts got together and built their dirt road.
And yeah, and then it was just named for them because they were so grateful or something. So yeah. So even the Boy Scouts own this land portion, I couldn't find any evidence to back that up. So those are the problems.
There's all kinds of problems, but I didn't read anything in there that I disagree with in the original story, or not. I guess that actually would be an original story because you made it up.
Because I wrote it.
But, you know, in the story, there were a couple of holes in it. It sounded very Hollywood 80s slasher movie.
Mm-hmm.
But those usually have some basis in whether it's the collective unconsciousness, whether it's an urban legend or what have you. It seems like a very viable urban legend. And we poke the usual holes in it. There's no evidence to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody couldn't be bothered to digitize a tape, maybe because it didn't exist. Not that I'm calling that lady out, but I'm kind of calling that lady out.
Yeah. Like, you know, I love a good blog post or, you know, spooky story posted on a forum. But yeah, that seems to be kind of a common denominator, though, with like the paranormal things is they, oh, I have, you know, this recording or this video, but then it just never materializes. So disappointing. But if there was a video, I'd probably be debunking that too, because I am who I am. Okay, so the whys on this. It's funny you said 80s slasher movie, because the blog post from the camp counselor actually said the legend has been around for over 20 years, which puts the origin of the legend in the 80s.
Right along the time of Sleepaway Camp,
mm-hmm.
Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a whole list of potential movies I could go through.
So this area, Linwood, I think, I'm not positive, is like an unincorporated area. So I think Linwood itself covers a large, like, mass of land, because it's not in Plover, though it's very close, and it's not in Stevens Point, though it's very close. It's on this kind of no man's land on the edge of these two towns that needs an address. You know, you have to have a postal address to send places to, but doesn't actually have like a post office, because there's no town center, at least from what I could tell from the maps. If I'm wrong, feel free to join in the conversation and correct me. So the road itself is really out in the middle of nowhere. When I described it at the beginning as, you know, being wooded and really close to the river, and it's just kind of in the middle of nowhere, it's a creepy location. While I haven't been there, that was also one of the general consensuses from people who commented on posts about the legend, saying that area is just creepy. It's actually really close to the river. The river kind of like does a loop up. And so the air is always damp and kind of misty and kind of creepy. So in the 80s, we've talked about this a couple of times. You have a generation of basically feral children, you know, teenagers who are raising themselves. It's the whole Gen X vibe. We're looking for places to go and do the stuff that we couldn't do in front of our parents, right? We're going to cemeteries and such to drink or get high or have sex, do whatever we were doing. So I think this dirt road that was completely wooded and private became a spot for kids in the area to go get into trouble. Yeah. And I can actually back that up with a report that I found in the newspapers that in the spring of 1986, 8 to 10 kids were all cited for underage drinking on the same day on Boy Scout Lane. And now that's just the ones that were cited. So I think that they were like partying out there.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe it was only a group of 8 to 10 kids, but it could have been more and they just didn't get caught or didn't, you know, hadn't been drinking. So they didn't get the citations. From reading the report, they didn't actually age the kids. They didn't say, you know, what age they were. And I believe in 86, the drinking age was 21 in Wisconsin. But it did mention that they were going to have their licenses suspended. So they were somewhere between the age of 16 and 21 is my reckoning. So you've got a bunch of kids out there drinking. In 1992 is when you start seeing vandalism reports from that area. So I talked about how people are being followed. And it's a very real thing, not a paranormal thing. because you have a bunch of kids using this as a party spot, or now a bunch of legend seekers going down there to take EMF readings and such. The property owners in the area are very cautious about who is going up and down that road, because there's three houses, I think, or four. There's not very many houses there. So they're very aware when people are driving up and down that road at night. And there were vandalism reports in the papers.
So, were there reports of Satanism?
No, actually.
Really?
No Satanism. Just
that surprises the hell out of me right there.
Kids drinking and then vandalism, knocking down signs and, you know, spray painting things. And
doing things that kids do when they're drunk.
Yep.
I was absolutely sure there was going to be a Satanist involved.
Nope, not in this one. Yeah, 80s and Satan go hand in hand. So now the first news report I actually saw on the legend was in 2005, which is 2 years before the blog post from our camp counselor. So if you're following the dots, you can actually almost pinpoint the day when this legend began, at least in my head. There's a big party down on Boy Scout Lane, and a bunch of kids get busted. Here's the thing, folks. Underage drinking will follow you for the rest of your lives, because the newspapers named the people. And so in 30 years, you might get some weird ass podcaster tracking you down asking.
So I got to tell you, I've been waiting for like a week to hear this part of the story.
Asking if you knew about the rumors of Boy Scout Lane before you were there on one spring evening in 1986. None of them responded to me. So I tracked down a handful of them and sent messages, but it's just, you know, some crazy lady on the internet. But I was trying to find out, if they ever do respond in the future, I will definitely update you. But I was trying to find out if they had heard of the legend before they went down there that night. Like, I don't care what they were doing there. I did the same thing. All of us Gen Xers did. But I wanted to know, was there a legend? Did they go down there because of the legend? Or when they were down there, so think about this. You're in a group of people. You're a teenager. You're drinking and trying to hook up. And you're sitting down on some creepy, misty, overgrown dirt road. What are you going to do as you're down in your beers or Boone's Farm or Mad Dog or JD if you're me? What are you doing down there?
Nothing I can tell you on the radio. Okay.
You are a different animal. You're trying to, now you did it to me because I was going to say, you're trying to hook up. No, you're not. Yeah, well, yeah, you are. But part of trying to hook up was telling spooky stories, right? No, not for you. No. Okay. So where I, at this time in my life where I lived, there was an area urban legend. And the boys would take the girls there to try and scare them, because they felt that it would, like, the girls would get scared. They'd want to be held close, and then they could, you know,
cop a feel.
Yeah. Get to second base.
So this will be another running theme in here. We grew up very differently.
You didn't need to use spooky stories to get the girls.
No. No, I was a musician. We got girls all the time. I actually said that with a straight face.
Tuba players didn't get all the girls.
I didn't play tuba.
In my brain, you know, following this progression, around the time that this party happened is probably when the legend started. It was a party spot. It was a, hey, let's go down here. And spooky stories were told. Maybe they talked about, why is the road named Boy Scout Lane? And somebody was like, oh, didn't you hear about the group of Boy Scouts that went missing? Even if it's not like when the legend was invented, I think it's when it got its traction.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense.
Yeah. And then it starts becoming a thing. And then we see the vandalism reports in 92, because more kids are going down there and the local residents are getting upset about it. So, yeah, I think this is one of the super rare occurrences where we can actually see the timeline happening, and you can see it in the news reports of the time where more and more kids are hanging out in this area, and then the vandalism reports start and it kind of quiets down, but then the news stories start and it becomes a thing and somebody's got evidence, and but the evidence never appears. So this one's a, even though the story isn't fully fleshed, the kind of the legend of it afterwards is. So yeah, it's kind of nifty in my mind. I don't know. You can agree or disagree. What do you think?
Well, I'm actually hoping that one of the people who you tried to contact gets back to you and says, no, that was never a thing until we were there.
I was kind of hoping that they were like, what? What's the legend of Boy Scout Lane? Or, you know, we went down there and we told ghost stories, or, you know, I sent out basically a form letter and I asked them like three questions, and it was just, had you ever heard of the legend of Boy Scout Lanes before that day? What compelled you to go to that area? And what were you talking about when you were there? Those like the three things that I asked. But again, if, you know, getting emails or, you know, social media messages from some rando person isn't necessarily going to compel somebody to open it or respond. So,
yeah,
chances are dim, but we shall see. If they ever do respond, I will let you know.
I think you're probably right, though, because to have a disappearance in the 50s, since popular media wasn't such a huge thing for a number of people to go missing, there would be some record of it.
Yes.
For there to be 30 years between the instance and the start of what would appear to be an urban legend is, I can't fathom that. There's no way you could have an entire town not talk about a busload of missing kids.
Right.
It would have been part of the popular culture in that area, not just the town it was in, but that would have worked its way down to Milwaukee, which would be the next biggest metropolitan area, right?
Yeah. Or Madison, I think.
So even then, it would be, that would have been a story I would have heard when I moved here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Y's, like, so you can kind of see the progression of this. And I did talk about one of the Y's earlier. This is Ed Gein's stomping ground. So you have that pervasive culture of, you know, this terrible thing happened here. And you're seeing, or we're seeing, similar things happen with, because I actually lived in Milwaukee when Dahmer was active. And I used to go past where he lived daily to get to work. And now that that building's been torn down and Dahmer is long gone, there are legends starting to crop up in that area. What are we, 30 years later?
Yeah.
Or more. And I'm hearing them from some people, especially those who are younger, like our kids' friends, talking about things that they've heard occur in this area. So you can see that formation of certain urban legends that may or may not be related to that activity, but are happening in that area because it's a pervasive part of the culture. This happened here. These creepy things happened here. So I think that plays a big part into this as well, that you have this culture of, I don't know, kind of creepy fear from knowing Ed Gein was right there in the area. And then, especially in the 80s, with that rebellious culture, and we were all talking about, you know, true crime stuff back then, because it was Ted Bundy and Ed Gein. And so I could see where a group of youths would, you know, start fomenting this legend just from the culture and the time. I don't know. I feel like I'm talking in circles, like I'm not making a ton of sense today.
No, you're making perfect sense. I'm one of the things I'm enjoying about this is looking at whether or not the urban legend has a traceable beginning or not, how it comes into and grows within the popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
This could have very well started out as something as simple as, all right, there's this dense, creepy area at the end of this road. I don't want you to go down there, talking to my child. Here's why I don't want you to go down here. Mm-hmm. There was a bus accident, something happened, and I don't want anything to happen to you, so don't go down there. Mm-hmm. And then as that child grows up and starts telling his friends and then his children, that story continues to grow. Mm-hmm. And it can eventually become cautionary tale, which we've seen in other stories.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of feeling like the reason that this one didn't go, because you said, you pointed out there's no Satanists in this story, and that was a very big theme with urban legends of the 80s, is Satanism tied up into it because of the satanic panic. And I think part of the reason that we don't see the Satanism in this, not even as a potential reason why the kids went missing, is because of that serial killer culture in that immediate vicinity. They were more apt to go with what was real to them, mm-hmm. than, you know, what was on the minds of a lot of other parents at the time.
So it was a matter of pick your boogeyman.
Yeah. Because a lot of them kind of centered on these kids were murdered. They were murdered by somebody, whether it was a serial killer or the Boy Scout troop leader or the bus driver, they were murdered. So I think that was a more real fear from parents and people at the time.
You know, a good follow-up question to if anybody does respond to you is ask them if they were a Boy Scout.
Okay.
Because, okay, now, granted, my experience with the Boy Scouts are very limited in what I've seen on television and movies. I know one of the stories that is in that Boy Scout handbook of story things is the guy with the hook on his hand.
Oh, yeah.
On the bus. Mm-hmm. So, riffing into what you were thinking, these group of kids got together. They were Boy Scouts who are no longer Boy Scouts, trying to hook up. They're telling stories. Is that the stories that they're telling them? A riff off of the man with the hook. So, I heard this when I was in the Boy Scouts. There were a bunch of Boy Scouts going down this road in a bus who were never heard from again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, no paranormal investigations have found any evidence of anything paranormal happening there, but it is a creepy area, and my understanding is that it is a fun place to just go walk down because it is creepy. Just the natural surroundings of it are pretty creepy. So if you want to visit, you can do so, but again, do so at your own risk because the residents in the nearby area aren't really receptive. They're not like violent. There's no reports of them like being confrontational or anything like that, but they are going to keep an eye on you to make sure that you're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing there.
I keep an eye on a car I don't know going down the street. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And now, so for the warning on this urban legend, and this one is really, it's all over the place because it has so many variations, and it's absorbed other local legends. I'm gonna read what I wrote down, but actually I think you've got the better one of this. I was trying to figure out what the warning of this is, but because it is so all over the place, I was kind of struggling with it, and I just kind of came up with teens trying to look cool, make up urban legends, and underage drinking is a crime and will stay on your record, and some crazy lady from a podcast will contact you 30 years later because of it. So, but I do think I think you've actually got it. It's one of those stay away from this area because it's dangerous for whatever reason. It's private property. You're going to get in trouble from the residents there. It's so wooded, you could get lost in the woods. And it morphed into this like murder story. So I think you're probably right. It was parents who were just trying to keep their kids away from an area that they didn't feel was safe.
Yes. And in the 80s, it never worked. Don't go there. Where's the first place I'm going to go?
Maybe it started in the 50s and like the kids were parking, you know, like.
Maybe.
Like, what was it from Happy Days? Blueberry Hill? No.
That's I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill.
What was the place that they used to go park?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so I think that was it. Was that a good story?
Yes. You know what was actually the best part of the story was the part you made up.
I made it all up. What are you talking about? No, I mean, I didn't make up that there's a legend there, but
you made up the middle, and there were spots of it where I'm like, I can believe this. I can get sucked into this.
I'm going to keep looking for that real one. I'd like to thank my sources. Thank you to Wikipedia.org for their entry, Boy Scout Lane. Thank you to WisconsinFrights.com for their article, 8 Most Haunted Roads in Wisconsin. Thank you for Devon Bell at devonbellauthor.wordpress.com for her blog entry, The Mysteries of Boy Scout Lane. And to Earthbound Angel at yourghoststories.com for her post, Boy Scout Lane. And lastly, thank you to Wisconsin Haunts for their YouTube video, Boy Scout Lane, America's Most Haunted Highways. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at origins.obscura, or drop us an email at originsobscura@gmail.com. That's originsobscura@gmail.com. Join us next time as we explore the origins obscura of legends and lore.